It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you. This is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. This is a major week for news. We don't even have time to get in the studio and talk about this news. It's too big and we need to jump on it right away. I'm sure you've heard this because it broke the internet, but Marvel Studios and Sony have come to an agreement about Spider-Man. Spider-Man can now appear in Marvel Studios movies like The Avengers. Also, Kevin Feige, the main producer at Marvel Studios, will be working on the next Spider-Man movie. We are going to have a Spider-Man that is fully integrated into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This was so big that everybody had an opinion, so we're going to talk to two of them now. First up is Jeff Sussman. Now, you know Jeff as introducing our show every week, and it's been a long time since he's been on the show. And then we're going to talk to Bill Monroe, and Bill's going to get into his version of it, along with some of the other major, major stories that came out this week. But first, let's talk to Jeff.
Oh, it's great. I mean, you know, can't miss for Marvel, for Sony, and most importantly, for the fans. I mean, let's face it. I mean, no one knows what to do with Spidey better than Marvel. And I just hope that they, I mean, I'm interested in, you know, I like all the Green Lanterns and I like all the Spider-Mans. But I just think that we haven't seen a fully realized Peter Parker yet. I mean, I like the elements of what both actors that have done before have done. But I would like to see Peter Parker again before I want to see a Miles Morales. Although the prospect of seeing another origin story does bore me, I'm grateful that we'll see him in a couple other movies before we maybe even have to deal with that.
Yeah, my feeling is I feel like Marvel Studios is savvy enough to not do the origin again. I know we're going to get a high school age Peter Parker, but I would love if they just jumped in and it's been, you know, like a few months since he's been bitten by the spider and since Uncle Ben died, and we can just pick up the story there, because I'm sure Marvel knows that people didn't want to sit through the origin story when they rebooted it with Andrew Garfield. So I don't think, even with their style, that they're going to think audiences want to see it a third time within a decade.
Well, it's just great. This is what they're also trying to do with Batman over at DC, but over at DC it just seems clunkier, is that bringing Spider-Man into the Avengers and Cat world, you know, you can avoid doing any kind of real origin. You might have to touch on it eventually, you know, in one of the earlier efforts. But, you know, they'll definitely make it through Cap 3 without having to address Spider-Man's origin. He'll just be there.
Right. And by you know, that point, he'll be introduced.
Exactly. And they have slated a reboot. Spider-Man solo film will be due on July 28th, 2017. And it just it kicked Thor back to Thanksgiving. So, you know, they just had to do some last-minute shuffling. But, you know, Cap 3 goes into production, I think, this spring. So this is something they had to move on. I'm really glad this deal got done. But they had the good sense, all of them. Because let's face it, Sony just did not know what to do with Marvel, but with Spider-Man. And, you know, Spidey needed a change of scenery without a question.
Yeah, I think Sam Raimi knew what to do with Spider-Man, which is why those first two worked so well. And it's once they really got involved that obviously Spider-Man 3 didn't work as well as the first two, and then he left it in their hands, and then it just kept going down that direction. So I think it'll write things pretty well.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I'm excited about a high school Spider-Man. Let's get back to the roots. I hope he's a nerd. He shouldn't be cool. You know, I liked Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man. I didn't love his Peter Parker. I actually preferred Tobey Maguire's Peter Parker, but the reputation kind of got tarnished with all the dance numbers in Spider-Man 3. You know, people kind of forget. But I thought Tobey Maguire was really onto something in the first movie, especially in the first act of that film as he discovers the powers. That really had an energy that I got excited about. And, well, you know, it comes down to just taste, I suppose. But I thought Willem Dafoe's performance was ridiculous, and the Green Goblin suit the mask was ridiculous, and it just made the whole thing look like a Power Rangers movie after a certain point in the movie. I'm just, oh boy, you know? Yeah. you know, Spider-Man 2 was much better. You know, Doc Ock was a much better the much better offering, I thought.
Oh, yeah, that's the best of all the films so far.
Yeah, definitely. But I still feel like we haven't seen the definitive, the definitive Spider-Man movie.
Yeah, I agree. There's pieces I like of each, but I felt like nothing's really combined all of it.
Yeah, I'm sad to say the same thing about the Hulk and then of the modern era Superman movies. I mean, you know, after watching Man of Steel, and, you know, there's a lot about Man of Steel I like, but a lot of it doesn't work for me. And now that I'm so far removed from Superman Returns, I'm able to appreciate some elements of that movie even that I didn't before, you know, just in the tone. I mean, I just think that, you know, they capture a certain lightness of the character that is just, you know, there's a certain fun aspect of it that it's just, when it's missing, it just doesn't feel like Superman. So, I don't know. I mean, you know, there's something to be said for sticking to the tone of the character. Like, I don't know if DC thinks they can pull off making every single movie dark, and, you know, they can't all, you know, is the Flash going to come out? Is that going to be dark? You know?
Yeah. So what's your feeling about not just Batman versus Superman, but overall Justice League and DC's whole plan? I mean, when the first season of Bat Signal, you're still in the Nolanverse, so you were really talking about what Dark Knight Rises was going to be. How are you going to address this in the Bat Signal, which is obviously a more focused podcast than Caffeinated Comics? How are you feeling on kind of the beginning of the Snyderverse?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, Zack Snyder is a director. I like a lot about his movies, but he directs cold films, in my opinion. He's great at doing epic action, but sometimes some of the themes can be heavy-handed because he doesn't develop the characters as much as he should, and then it's all just kind of glaring in front of you. So for me, you know, he was great for Watchmen. I found Man of Steel to be just like a little bit cold. I'm a little bit concerned, you know, I mean, I think the action is just going to be epic. And, I am definitely looking forward to seeing these movies. But part of what I loved about the Nolan Batman trilogy is that I really like Chris Nolan as a director. You know, I haven't been in love with all of his films. He's not my favorite, you know, overall director. But when he got the Batman franchise, I was super excited because, you know, I had seen Memento and, you know, here was a guy who was behind just some really, really interesting work that really hit me on a certain level. Zack Snyder, his movies are impressive to look at, like 300, but I mean, let's face it, it's just kind of fluff. And I think these characters can be more than that, more than just, you know, fighting and fluff, you know?
Yeah, so. I'm concerned as well. I haven't written it off, but I'm not sure what we're going into, but I think that's one of the things that's making it exciting that you're doing a new season of Bat Signal is that we're in such a period of flux. There's going to be a lot to talk about. So how can we find the podcast?
Well, we're definitely still on iTunes, or you can check us out directly at the hosting site. It's pretty basic, but you'll find a link there for any of you out there that are not Mac people. I know not everybody has iTunes, so that's the thing, but the website is Bat Signal Show. At batsignalshow.podbean.com. That's podbean.com. And follow the show on Twitter at batsignalshow. We'll always have links to new episodes and tidbits that we pick up along the way. It's at batsignalshow. And you can follow me on Twitter too. It's at susme, S-U-S-S-M-E. And then you'll get all the information as we get it.
Now let's go over to Bill. As I mentioned earlier in the podcast, we start right away with Spider-Man, but this was a big week. Jon Stewart announced he was leaving The Daily Show. Brian Williams has been suspended from NBC News. We get into a lot of those things, as well as the premiere of Better Call Saul. So what you're going to hear is a typical conversation between Bill and I. It's going to go to a lot of places, but touch on most of the news this week.
It's interesting because I ended up having, you know, sort of two reactions before reading the article, and then reading the article completely changed my mind about the whole thing.
Okay, so what were your reactions before reading it?
My first reaction was, really? Do we really do we really want to do this? Is this really need to be a big deal? I mean, I get it. Yeah, it's stupid that the big Marvel universe can't have Spider-Man, but at the same time, I'm okay with the big Marvel universe not having Spider-Man. Spider-Man's a great character in his own right. He's got a great story. But, you know, whenever he would show up on the Avengers or show up in the Fantastic Four in the comic books, it was always like he was always just sort of like this little pet. I mean, he never really fit in with that. I mean, yes, Spider-Man is great when you got somebody who's smashing up the city. If you have Spider-Man come along, he can take care of it. He's got his little witty banter and his webs and flying all around. And those first couple of movies were great Spider-Man movies. But the tone that Spider-Man brings to something is just so completely different than what you see in an X-Men environment or an Avengers environment or even a West Coast Avengers environment. So it was like, you know what? I'm okay with everything completely being separate. Keep him out of there. That's fine. Let Sony go ahead and fail on their own. Hey, Sony, how about you tell us the Spider-Man origin story again? Because I don't think I got it the first time.
Well, that's exactly why I like it. It's not so much that Spider-Man can be in the Avengers, but that Kevin Feige is producing the next Spider-Man. I don't like it for the crossover. I like it for the fact that Marvel Studios is knocking it out of the park to a point where Guardians of the Galaxy is amazing and Sony can't do a Spider-Man movie right.
Right.
This means we're going to get a good Spider-Man movie again.
We might get a good Spider-Man movie again. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy is amazing. I don't know if we've talked about this on the podcast before, but I'm convinced that Guardians of the Galaxy is it started in a Marvel conference room or hallway someplace as just like a Pygmalion or My Fair Lady project where somebody said, yeah, we make such good movies. We could do anything with any character and make it a good movie. And somebody went, oh, yeah? I'll bet you $100 you can't do anything with Guardians of the Galaxy.
I'll bet you $500 million.
Yeah, I mean, and they did it, and they knocked it out of the park. And
not only did they do that, but they put Howard the Duck in it just to rub your nose in it.
Yeah, the next time we're going to do a Howard the Duck. Deal with it. That's just amazing to have that much confidence, which then led me to sort of my second reaction about Spider-Man coming back. And that's went from, oh, geez, I don't care to, you know what? I don't care because Marvel is knocking it out of the park. And ultimately, I feel like when we start talking about Avengers and things, we're sort of falling into this whole mantra now of, in Whedon we trust. It seems like if anybody can do something with Spider-Man, get him in the hands of Whedon, get him in the hands of the folks who are working with Whedon. And I think, you know what? Those folks can do it. I'm just going to say, you know what? I don't care. It doesn't bother me. Bring him in. I think I am happy with this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I read the article.
Okay.
Now this article.
The article, which, to clarify, was the press release that I believe came from Disney, was on Marvel.com. So
yes.
you've read the article that's on our Facebook page that everyone's read.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And what I see in this article is they've come to this agreement, which really seems like it's nothing but a complete mess. This isn't a plan for a movie character. This is, a court-mandated child visitation with supervised visitation from a judge in a bad, really bad divorce case. We're getting Sony's going to get Spider-Man for like one weekend, and then Marvel Studios gets Spider-Man for another weekend, and then he goes back to Sony again to make another movie. And it's like, really? You're going to keep passing the characters back and forth, and you're going to expect to get good results out of a project like this with people consulting and cross-doing? This is a committee. This is not how you're going to make a good movie. This is how you make a bad movie. This is probably how they made Spider-Man 3 and, the second Spider-Man 2, and this is not good. This is a mess.
No. I completely disagree with you. To use your own analogy of a messy divorce, what was happening with Spider-Man was the alcoholic mother had sole custody. So at least the dad who's gotten himself together and he's got a new job, and he managed to get a new house. Now he gets to have an influence on the kid again. And yes, yeah, I made the father the hero.
But at the same time, that father remarried into a blended family. Now his stepkids, who are healthy and doing well and are on the honor roll, are now going to be exposed to this damaged kid from the alcoholic mother. And now they're going to have to deal with the alcoholic mother as well.
But isn't that the Marvel Universe?
The Marvel Universe is an alcoholic mother and a damaged kid?
Yes, it is. That's what Stan Lee brought to it. That's what the DC Universe is not. It's damaged goods.
Damaged goods. The DC Universe is institutionalized.
Exactly. It's a white suburban community.
It's just like Clark Kent is sitting in an asylum just hallucinating everything. And once a day he wakes up and then goes back to sleep and reboots the entire universe dream in his head.
Right. And Marvel is messy and crazy and people don't get along and they don't know what they're doing. And you know what? You're convincing me that Spider-Man and Marvel Studios is even a better idea.
I will say that Spider-Man needs Marvel Studios more than anything possible. And that bringing Spider-Man into this Marvel Studios family is just poison for everybody else in the Marvel Studios family.
I don't think so, because Spider-Man is still the Mickey Mouse of Marvel. He's the, you know, more... He's more than the Batman of Marvel. He's always been the face of Marvel since the 60s, and there's a Spider-Man-shaped hole in Marvel Studios. Now, it's true, they still don't have X-Men. They still don't have Fantastic Four, but let's be fair. I love the Fantastic Four, but they're they haven't been a major player in decades. X-Men has always kind of been in its own wing of the Marvel Universe anyway, so it's easy to ignore them. The fact that you don't have Spider-Man in a New York with the Avengers, it calls attention to itself.
You know, I think it calls attention to itself more within our community. I think when you start looking in the broader population and the people who are doing the, you know, driving these, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in attendance at these movies, they don't know that they don't know there's a Spider-Man shaped hole necessarily in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. What they know is they might know that, hey, how come Spider-Man didn't show up in Gotham? Most people don't know that one character is Marvel, one's DC, and that it's different universes operating completely separately. They want to know, you know, if they think about it at all, it's not nearly that level. They're not thinking, why is Spider-Man missing from this when he's part of this universe elsewhere? Most people just don't see it that way.
Yeah, I believe you're right there, but I also think that's the exact reason why Andrew Garfield is not continuing as Spider-Man. Because I agree with you. I think to the average moviegoer who doesn't know about comics, they don't really understand that X-Men is being separated from Avengers and Spider-Man's being separated from Guardians of the Galaxy. They just think, oh, there's a bunch of superhero movies. And you're right. Maybe some people even think, hey, why aren't Batman and Superman here? There are, I would think by now, and maybe because this is the kind of podcast we do, I would think by now most people understand the difference between Marvel and DC. But I would imagine that most people don't understand the difference between Marvel Studios and Sony. And this is making a clear distinction between the two. What it comes down to for me is I think the Sony Spider-Man movies are going to get better because Marvel Studios has a hand in it. And as we've seen with, we're up to 8 movies now, they understand the characters. So whatever Spider-Man movie it's going to be, and there are things I don't like about it. I don't like that we're going back to high school yet again. You know, I understand you want to recast it. Yeah. You don't want to be Andrew Garfield. You don't want it to be confused. Obviously, you're not going to go back and get Tobey Maguire again.
Right.
But, you know, you and I, we're the same age. We grew up with a Spider-Man who was in his mid-20s and had a crappy job working for the Daily Bugle and the worst apartment you could draw.
Yep. And occasionally showed up on the electric company.
Occasionally showed up on the electric company. It wasn't allowed to talk. But he was like, but for me, for our generation, and for me, Spider-Man has always been a guy in his 20s who can't keep his life together. And I feel like the movies have gone out of their way not to do that, Spider-Man. And that annoys me. I feel like Spider-Man graduated high school in 1965, yet three out of the five Spider-Man movies have had him in high school. Do we need him in high school again?
Right. Yeah. I don't think we do. I think they're trying to do the whole, how do you appeal not only to the younger crowd, but how do you appeal to the nerd crowd? Let's make him the popular nerd. And, you know, which we sort of get the sense that, you know, Spider-Man in high school, he's kind of cool. He's kind of edgy. And, you know, that's not really who Peter Parker was.
And that's what they were doing with the Andrew Garfield ones.
Right, right. You know, he's
giving
him
the skateboard and,
you know, and the smart ass lines at the end of the movie and everything like that. I mean, it just, you know, it's just not quite true to the character. And that gets back to, you know, the problem I have with the way this is being structured is like what you were talking about Mickey Mouse. The thing about Mickey and why Mickey is so iconic in part is because you knew who Mickey was. There was a very strong definition of what Mickey was and what Mickey would do even when he was doing goofy stuff. I think this would be awesome if Sony just wiped their hands and handed Spider-Man off to Marvel. Let's just get a clean break and let's get somebody said this committee driving it of now Marvel is having to consult with Sony on their movies and vice versa to sort of work together to, you know, sort of tell a cohesive story when both the studios have gone very different directions in what they're doing with their characters and with their understanding of the characters and of the superhero movie, superhero genre in general. And I think that, you know, is going to be the problem. I think it's one of those things where now instead of getting one voice for Spider-Man, now we're going to be getting a couple of different voices, or we're going to be getting a muddled voice, a muddled, singled, sort of driven down voice for what the character is going to be. And that's where I think we run into trouble.
Yeah, and obviously Marvel would want nothing better than to just have Spider-Man back. Marvel would not love nothing better than to have all their characters back. They would love,
right.
They would love to have the X-Men back.
Right.
But, you know, this is as good as they could get, you know, and there was a lot of negotiations. Obviously, the Sony email hacks had a lot to do with bringing it
sure.
to light, which, in terms of the fan base, helped to move it forward. But one of the things I thought was interesting about this agreement, which it doesn't say in the press release, but I've read it in other articles, no money is changing hands. They haven't paid, neither one has paid another for a certain amount of rights. What they're doing is, again, back to your divorce analogy,
they're moving out and selling the house?
Yep. they're selling the Daily Bugle. But Sony is not getting any money from Spider-Man's appearance in, say, Avengers 3 or 4.
Right.
And Marvel's not Kevin Feige, who's been producing all the Marvel Studios films, is producing the next Spider-Man movie for free. So it's kind of, I love the fact that they're really collaborating to try to make the best product possible. And yeah, there's going to be a lot more cooks in the kitchen, and that might make it a lot more complicated. But the fact is, now we've got better cooks in the kitchen than we've had on the last two or three movies.
You know, and as long as they're both working on the same thing in the same general direction, that's great. I don't want them working on, you know, Sony's working on the, you know, the wonton soup appetizer while Marvel is working on the lasagna entree. That doesn't work. They're all going to be in the kitchen. They all got to be on the same page, and they got to be telling the story. And maybe what they need to do is choose one person who is going to run everything.
Right. I think that is a good analogy, because you look at the last three movies and you don't get a sense in those movies that everyone at Sony, without Marvel's input, was telling the same stories.
Right.
Everything after those first two Sam Raimi films have been a mess and all over the place.
Exactly, exactly.
And what my feeling is this gets us back on track. It's obviously at least a step in the right direction. The other thing I am very, very excited about, this occurred to me about an hour or two later, is that door could swing both ways. So not only do you have Spider-Man in the Avengers, you could have other characters from Spider-Man's universe in the Avengers. If you want to have J. Jonah Jameson yelling at Iron Man, you can do it. If you right. If you want to have the Guardians of the Galaxy fight the Rhino, you can do it. Spider-Man has the richest supporting characters in all of comics.
He does.
And the second best villains of anyone in comics next to Batman.
You know, just from, yeah, I mean, his villains have tremendous longevity, you know, like the Batman villains.
And they run as deep. Both Spider-Man and Batman have like 20 to 30 really great villains.
You know, and they're accessible. They're understandable. Yeah. I mean, the Fantastic Four, you know, with their rich history, you know, their villain list, it's just, I mean, just because of the nature of the storytelling and the science fiction and everything, it's just a much more complex villain story, villain collection to actually grab you.
Yeah, they're weird.
Yeah.
Although I'm surprised, speaking of villains, because some of the, there's a strong rumor that Andy Serkis is playing Claw in Avengers 2. He certainly looks like he is, and that he would be the main villain in Black Panther. I always considered him a Fantastic Four villain.
Right.
But that just shows these things aren't that cut and dried.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, the other thing that's really interesting coming out of this, too, is just this sort of almost throwaway section of the press release, which shocks me and kind of appalls me, is that Spider-Man is the most successful franchise in the history of Sony Pictures.
Yeah. And I mean,
that's kind of astounding considering, you know, how bad several of the movies were and just how critical this has been to their history and their business. It almost makes me think, okay, so looking at this and looking at the email hack, Sony parent company is in serious financial straits. What if, do you think there's a possibility of Disney Studios or Disney buying Sony Studios?
First of all, it all comes down to willingness.
Right.
I feel like Sony, at the end of the day, Sony's bread and butter is creating electronics for media, and it's in their best interest to have an arm that creates the content. So I feel like Sony will never want to sell it. And to be fair, Sony didn't create it themselves. Sony bought Columbia. That's
right.
Really what we're talking about. And that's the thing. When you go back in the history of Columbia, you don't see the major franchises that you see for 20th Century Fox or Warner Brothers or Disney. You know,
right.
And I, you know, part of that the Sony email hacks came out of like, how are they going to bank? I mean, we read all these things about Warner Brothers, about how desperate they were to get three Hobbit movies out because that could continue the Tolkien franchise, because they have yet to figure out how to sell any other superhero except Batman, so they can't rely on DC.
And they've kind of killed the Tolkien franchise now, too.
Yeah, they buried that, and now they're trying to bring back Harry Potter and, like, twisting J.K. Rowling's arm to write whatever book she can in the universe so they can adapt it. But Columbia doesn't even have that. Columbia was talking about things in the hacks like teaming up 21 Jump Street and Men in Black just because those were two comedy franchises that have worked for them. Like, that's why they won't give up Spider-Man. Part of the deal they made a few years ago when they renegotiated was they gave Marvel back the television rights just to hang on to the movie rights, because they don't have anything like it. So we had Spectacular Spider-Man, the animated series, which was my favorite, just got canceled because Sony was producing it. And it was immediately replaced by Ultimate Spider-Man, which was produced by Marvel and Disney.
Right.
So they're trying, and that's why they rebooted it with Andrew Garfield, because when Spider-Man 4 fell through, And initially, they were talking to Sam Raimi about doing Spider-Man 4, and he wanted John Malkovich to play the Vulture.
That would be excellent.
Wouldn't it? It drives me crazy that we'll never see that. But when that fell through, they immediately were just like, we have to reboot it because we have to keep these Spider-Man movies alive because as a studio, we don't have anything that comes close to it. And the other thing, the article I read about how successful a franchise it is for them, it all hinges on that first movie. Because that first movie made so much profit for them. Because it didn't cost as much as any of the other sequels.
Yeah.
And if you remember back in the summer of 2002, and you and I saw it being shot.
Yes, we did.
As you call it.
We did. Moving all day, you know, getting everybody to drive all those cars at exactly the right moment and blocking off the streets and everything. It was amazing just how much prep was involved in just running the camera for like 2 to 3 seconds.
Yeah, and the shot we saw was when Peter first tests his webs with the kind of fly web.
Right.
The
swinging across the street.
Yeah, the street he swings across and then hits the wall was around the corner from my house where I lived. But when that came out, everybody was banking on Attack of the Clones that summer. That was supposed to be the big movie.
Right.
Spider-Man just shot past it and kept going and going and going. And really, it's that first Spider-Man movie, more than X-Men, is what created the new superhero boom. It was that successful that everything we've had, and we've surpassed it now with things like Iron Man and Avengers and the Dark Knight, but it's all built on that first Spider-Man, and Sony seeing these movies come in making less and less money, and they don't know how to recapture that first film, and they're thinking, well, look at the guys that are making, you know, $2 billion with Avengers and $1 billion with Guardians of the Galaxy that own all the other characters and know this character inside and out.
Right.
If we can get them to put us on the right course, we'll all do better. Rising tide raises all boats.
Right. Yeah, I think there, you know, I'm thinking there's got to be something else going on in there, though. There's got to be something deeper contractually because to be able to give it really hints at just how much trouble Sony is in from a broader perspective. Because, I mean, you don't need the blockbusters to be a successful studio.
No, but you need some substantial profit makers. And for every Blair Witch, you never know. That's lightning. You never know when that's going to strike. But if you build a summer blockbuster and it's not terrible, then you can kind of put all your financial projections on that.
Right. And you know, and I think that's the other thing, too, about with the recasting. That it certainly gives you an a cost advantage. I imagine that by the time you would get to Link, do we really still want to use Tobey Maguire? I imagine he's just a lot more expensive at that point than Andrew Garfield is.
Right, and that's what Marvel Studios is running into with Robert Downey. But Marvel Studios is in
Robert Downey, who now all he has to do is he can just sort of sit at home and shoot it all on Skype.
Yeah, if I was Robert Downey, I would just keep cranking these things out and never get an emotion capture suit ever again.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe you walk around the 58th helicarrier or something and call it good.
I would take $5 million of my dollars that I'm making for the movie and I would give it to Andy Serkis and have him run around in a motion capture suit and be the armor.
And have the armor walking around behind Tony.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like, just remote control armors. Yeah, you can have them in the same scene. I figured they just work alternate days. Oh, you need armor for this scene? I'm going home. Say hello to Andy. He's already Claw. You know him.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, Robert Downey Jr. has never acted in that suit, I'm sure.
I think in the first movie, but I have seen set shots where he had, like, the helmet and the shoulders, and then the rest was dots.
Yeah, I mean, why would you put him in the Iron Man pants? You don't need to.
No, nobody needs the Iron Man pants. I don't even know if the Iron Man pants work. There's like two big gears on top of your hips that look like they'll just tear right into your groin if you move the legs. You know, Hot Toys makes those beautiful Iron Man figures, and they do not put a human being action figure inside them.
No, of course not.
The Batman suit is a human being Bruce Wayne figure with a suit on top of it. Iron Man is not.
Iron Man is not. No, of course not.
But of course, all this recasting and maneuvering pales in comparison to the fact that this is also the week we lost Brian Williams and Jon Stewart. So I posted today, I don't know who's going to host the Daily Show, and I don't know who's going to be Spider-Man, and I'm trying to figure out who's going to be on the damn podcast.
Well, you know, I think obviously we're seeing a lot of folks on the internet, being the internet, are suggesting that, of course, Brian Williams should host The Daily Show. You know, he's always done well on his appearances on Letterman.
Yeah,
and
30 Rock.
And on 30 Rock. And, you know, he probably would prefer to do that anyway.
At this point, yeah, my question is, will anyone ever let him back on television?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Now, why do you think he said that?
I think he either got caught up in the moment.
Yeah.
Or he was just, you know, trying to make the story better. I think, in terms of outright lying, I wouldn't say it's – I would say, you know, it's probably something, you know, it could be just a bunch of different stories he was telling. It could be something he was just – I don't know, a moment of sheer stupidity. Who knows? But, I mean –
I'm inclined to think it was bad advice.
His
producers are like, you know what would make this story even better? If you were in the helicopter that actually got hit.
Right. Exactly.
Like, I feel like there was somebody telling him to do that and then adding the phrase, trust me.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one area you don't want to mess. You just don't want to mess with. It's just not worth it. But yeah, he'll be back. I mean, didn't Hillary Clinton have something similar regarding coming under attack in Kosovo or something like that, or
something like that. I can't believe that Sarah Palin is still on media airwaves.
Yeah, I mean,
people don't go away anymore.
They don't, and you know, because I mean, you just think about what you do know. I mean, Brian Williams, people do like him. They will forget. They will forgive. He may make a slow return. And Anthony Weiner was able to come back into politics.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Nobody's ever gone forever.
Barry, he came back. I mean, his career is not over. He's going to go away. He's going to spend some time with his family. He'll be contrite. He may go ahead and volunteer somewhere. Maybe he'll get involved in veterans issues, and maybe he'll spend a year or two teaching journalism at some college. He'll start a podcast. He'll start being a contributing editor and correspondent someplace, and then he'll get his own kind of show.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the reason he's where he is now is not only is he smart, not only does he know what he's doing, but he's likable and people like him. And if you are likable, people will find a way to help you.
Yeah, I have to admit, I feel bad for him. Like, usually when somebody's caught in a lie, I want to see them go away and be punished.
Right.
And like Brian Williams is one of the few times I'm like, what exactly did he say? Well, he shouldn't have said that. I kind of want to forgive him.
Yeah. And that's because, you know, he probably has generally treated folks well.
Yeah. Do you think it has something to do with the fact that you can't be objective in news anymore? It used to be, you know, to bring it back to comics, news anchor used to be Uatu the Watcher. You know, Walter Cronkite just sat there and impassively told you what happened, and he saw it, and he was involved, and however he was, and the time I met him, he was very drunk.
Uh-huh.
It didn't affect what he said about the news. And now you have Brian Williams, who's kind of pushing himself into the news.
Well, there are a few things going on here, I think. First of all, obviously, we have the much wider space for news that you have to fill. They have to be more entertaining. So that, of course, drives some of it.
You have more competition.
The other thing is this whole idea of the objective newscaster returning to some golden age of that. Let's be realistic. That maybe existed for 15 years.
Yeah.
You know, if you go back, you know, you start looking at the at whether you're talking about news coverage, whether you're talking about radio coverage, you start going back, and journalism has not historically been objective. Maybe that's an ideal we strive for. Maybe we had the appearance of it, you know, in the 60s and in the 70s. But even then, all journalism is always going to have a bias, if from nothing else, from just the stories that they choose to tell and how they're choosing to engage folks and how they're choosing to engage the audience. I know there's a lot out there. Everybody talks about the liberal bias of the media and whatnot. I don't necessarily buy that. Where I think the bias always comes into is that journalism, it's always about telling the story. And it's always about getting the story and telling what you believe people should know and what people are going to be interested in and what's going to make people stop and, you know, choose you over the other two network channels, or now choose you over the other 500, you know, cable programs that are out there and all the other news and other sources. And so there's always been that bias towards, what is going to be a better story, and how are we going to communicate that, and what do we want to say about that? Because everything, when you're and even if you look back into this classic age of this impartial journalism, there you're dealing with an even heavier edit on things, because you don't have an hour to go into a story. You're trying to tell a complex story about the Vietnam War and what we're doing in 7 minutes, maybe, and that's, you know, 1/3 of your entire newscast, and that's it. And you're going to tell us a good story about that. There's inherent bias in all of that. And I think when we start, saying that we want to go back to an age, or it used to be that, you didn't have any of this. Yeah, it's always been there. The form's a little bit different. Maybe it's a little bit louder now than it has been in recent decades. It's still not nearly as loud and obnoxious as it was in the newspapers of the early 1900s, the 1800s, etc.
Yeah, you got a good point. And I think that phrase, telling a good story, is exactly how this happened. Because, as you know, when you tell a story again and again, you always want to make it a little more dramatic.
Exactly. And once you say something out loud, now you start, that's just simple. Once you say something, then you start to believe it's true. Even if you made it up one time, you say it, you start to believe it internally, just subconsciously. It's one of the things why, when you're in sales, you want to get your customer to agree with you on things little by little. They get to, they're starting to commit to things more and more as they go on. When we start talking about just the importance of storytelling, people don't care about the thousands of people who get killed in a conflict. You tell a story about a parent who lost a child in that conflict, and now people are interested. Now people care. When you can start tying that in and you start bringing that together, that's what engages. Because I'm not saying that's a bad thing. It's not a good or a bad thing. That's just a human nature. We respond to stories. The truth, and now we're going to get, here I go really off the deep end here, but if we want to start going back to, the Greek philosophical ideas of what is truth, it's the combination of the logos, the pathos, and the ethos, the logic or facts of the situation, the ethos of how you feel about the people, how you feel and trust about the people who are telling you the story, the pathos, how they make you feel emotionally. The real truth that we resonate with and that we respond to is where all three of those things intersect. And that's why just raw listings of facts on the web, or if you just read out statistics and data on a newscast, that doesn't resonate with people. That's why policy wonks rarely win elections, because those facts, those lists of facts, that's not the true truth that people respond to. It's why you start hearing politicians telling individual stories. It's why a Joe the Plumber was able to make headlines. It's why when you listen to all of these different debates, they'll go out and they'll tell you a story about this one person, this small business person, or this person who lost their job, or who lost their health insurance, or who is who is a victim of an attack, or any of this. It's those stories that resonate. And so those stories, obviously, in the news, they have to have that core of facts, but sometimes that gets out of hand.
Well, and that's a problem intellectuals always complain about is why aren't you listening to these facts? Why aren't you listening to these facts? Because a compelling story will trump them.
You can talk all you want about 1.5 degree increase in global ocean temperatures, and that means nothing. That's not going to drive anything. You put a picture of a polar bear on a tiny melting ice float, now you've got a story.
Yeah. very, very good point. So I'm wondering if we should bring it back. Well, who do you think should host the Daily Show?
So who do you think should host the Daily Show? You know what? Chris Hardwick.
You know, I saw Chris Hardwick come up, but what was really interesting was the con they listed in the article, and you will probably disagree with this because you're on one side of the fence, is that he's polarizing. Also, I think he's perfect where he is with At Midnight because he's a great host,
mm-hmm.
but he's not someone who traditionally has a political point of view. I think the big mistake they made was letting go of John Oliver. Because he turned that HBO show into something that's as good as The Daily Show. And had they told him, look, wait a year and we'll give this to you and you could turn The Daily Show into Last Week Tonight.
Right.
You'd have something really strong.
And, you know, and maybe they'll be able to bring him back. Maybe they will and hire him away. I mean, remember, you know, 3 weeks before Drew Carey got The Price Is Right, he launched his own game show.
Yeah. Like yeah, a, but
you know, they can get John Oliver back if they want him. You know, and maybe Chris Hardwick.
Last Week Tonight is already pretty successful. If this was something that was struggling, if it was something like W. Kamau Bell was totally biased, where it was really interesting, but it was kind of buried on FXX. I could see that, but I feel like that first season's done really well. The second season's doing really well. He's building his own legacy. It's like trying to get Bill Maher to come back and do Politically Incorrect again. He doesn't have the incentive.
It depends on what he's really interested in, because they could certainly write the check and give, you know, and he would definitely have a bigger audience on The Daily Show if he wanted to do that.
You really think that Comedy Central would have the budget and the audience that HBO doesn't? I mean, granted, they have the brand name.
They have the brand.
I mean, The Daily Show gets 2 million viewers. I'm not sure what he's getting on HBO, but 2 million is not that much.
You know, it's not a huge amount, but it's probably more than he's getting on HBO on a daily basis. I mean, just from the sheer subscriber base. I mean, you know, most people are not subscribing to HBO.
Yeah, but HBO still has shows like Game of Thrones where you clearly see budget being poured into it.
You do. And with shows like Game of Thrones, they're making a ton of that on DVD sales, on streaming, on other things. This gets to one of the other key projects. Do you know who owns Comedy Central?
Viacom.
That's a Viacom project.
Yeah.
Product. Okay. And Viacom is still, they're still just a production house, right? Who's Viacom owned by?
No, Viacom is the parent company.
Viacom is the parent company. Okay,
Viacom in the old days made their money
with MTV.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and before that, reruns. Because you remember growing up in the 70s, a lot of shows like
Syndicator.
Yeah, I feel like I Love Lucy, The Monkees, they would all have Viacom logos after them.
Right, right. So this is where it gets interesting. Since it's not a Universal property. That gives them a lot more advantages, because HBO and Comcast are about to hit a major fight. Mm. And we're going to see it coming up. And this ties all into the net neutrality type of thing. Because one of the things, the sole reason we haven't seen the HBO app is just now starting to come out. They're starting to talk about letting people subscribe to just their stuff over the internet. And that's
right, and not have to pay for the channel.
For the cable distributors and for the cable companies. So they would do anything to fight against that. Now, Viacom is primarily a content house rather than a pipe house. They certainly have a little bit more opportunities to partner more with an HBO. And maybe there is an HBO Studios produces The Daily Show or something like that to bring John Oliver back. But stepping away from John Oliver for a moment, you know, obviously for Chris Hardwick, it's you know, he doesn't have the edge to put on there. You know, he's not. It's interesting. I would describe him specifically as not polarizing, because Jon Stewart, he was a polarizing figure.
Yeah, but he was polarizing in the way that it played to The Daily Show's strengths, because The Daily Show was going to be polarizing.
Right, right. But I do know
people that do not like Chris Hardwick, and I like him.
Sure.
But I know people that have a reaction against him.
Well, they're wrong.
I told you were going to say this, but there are people that I respect. I'm not going to name names, obviously. But there's people that I respect that do not like him. And apparently there's a good amount of people that feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have no idea who could host the Daily Show right now.
What about Hodgman? John Hodgman.
Maybe a little too dry. I think he would have the same problem that somebody like Paul F. Tompkins would have, who I love. They're not quite edgy enough. They're quirky.
Okay.
You know, you need somebody. It's a very hard mixture. Colbert had that mixture. I thought Larry Wilmore was an inspired choice to replace Colbert. And he's doing it. He has that mixture. I feel like he's not as strong a presence, but given time on the air, I think he'll get there. The Nightly Show, come back in 3 years, I think will be very, very strong. I don't know. Okay. I'd love to see there's people I would love to see have a show every day, but with their kind of agenda, you know?
Well, do you need to replace Jon Stewart on The Daily Show? I mean, do you just keep The Daily, maybe keep, you know, just completely rework the show into something else? What else could it be? Does it need to be that same kind of thing?
I think it needs to be political because that's what it's built on. I mean, Craig Kilborn wasn't doing that, and he wasn't doing much with the show. It's Jon Stewart who built that show.
Right.
And obviously, whoever takes it will shape it into something else. But Comedy Central has said it's going to remain The Daily Show. It's not we're canceling The Colbert Report and we're starting another show called The Nightly Show. This is going to be – someone is taking over The Daily Show. And, yeah, it'll change the same way that Conan didn't do the same Tonight Show that Leno did, but it was still The Tonight Show.
Right, right.
Yeah, you know, I mean, somebody you need somebody smart and edgy. Louis C.K. would be great, but I don't see him wanting it.
Oh, I don't – yeah, no, I don't think that's – I don't see Louis C.K. doing that kind of show.
No, I feel like with Louis, he's doing exactly what he wants. He's taking time to craft these half hours and be left alone.
Yeah.
You know, you need somebody a little young.
Right.
And traditionally, they promoted from within. And they have some really great correspondence, but they don't quite have the John Oliver or the Stephen Colbert or the Steve Carell right now.
What? True. What about? I don't know. You know, I have a feeling that whoever it is going to be somebody I haven't really heard of.
Maybe
it's somebody we don't know. I mean, somebody who's still up and coming, maybe working in a writer's room someplace, or in a circuit. Somebody that you may know more from the comedy circuit.
So you're thinking like a Conan O'Brien type.
You know, maybe, or Harry Kondabalu type. Mm-hmm. Somebody who's making a name for themselves, getting a little bit edgy, and you know, if you're not following this stuff closely, you wouldn't necessarily know them.
Right. Yeah, I feel like that was the idea with Larry Wilmore, but Larry Wilmore has been a correspondent for years on The Daily Show.
I'd never heard of him.
You had, he had created the Bernie Mac show.
And of course, I am the pinnacle of American. but you know, I think that's the thing. A lot of people, I think it's somebody, you know, from outside the general public's awareness that it becomes a, you know, who the heck is this guy?
Yeah.
Unless, you know, they pull somebody. It's not like they could pull somebody from late night. That's already been through its whole tumult type of thing.
Right, and that's the thing. The Daily Show, compared to the other late night shows,
it says
2 million viewers a night. It's not that big. So you're not going to get somebody who's bigger right now.
Right. Wait a second. Let me think about this for a second. Mm-hmm. Is Jimmy Fallon right now the most post-Letterman retirement, the most senior late-night host?
No, Conan.
Conan, of course.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he's cable, but yeah, it'll be Conan. And then it'll be Colbert once you add in the Colbert Report
to his show. Okay, yeah. Okay. Still, that's a lot of changeover.
You're getting old, Bill. Dude, yeah. I remember when Conan started, it was like, wow, somebody from my world, from my generation, and granted, he's like 10 years older than us. My generation has their own talk show.
And he had moved to that talk show after having already written on, what, season 8 of The Simpsons?
Yeah, season 3-4, and he had written on Saturday Night Live with Bob Odenkirk. And have you seen Better Call Saul yet?
I have not.
Did you finish Breaking Bad?
I haven't started Breaking Bad.
Oh, don't see.
I am so behind on my TV right now. I'm still, you know, dealing at the very beginning of the Governor episodes of The Walking Dead. Haven't even started Breaking Bad or, you know, Sleepy Hollow. I've got like 14 episodes sitting on my TiVo right now. Sons of Anarchy. That's not even on the horizon of things I'm going to get to. But I am well caught up on Doctor Who and watching reruns nonstop these days.
Yeah, I'm caught up on everything, and I feel like I can't watch a movie anymore because my DVR always has 3-4 shows on.
Yeah, exactly. I'm somehow or other, I've even fallen behind on Agent Carter, and that's a great show.
Agent Carter is really good. I've almost not fallen behind on it, but last night I caught up, and it's always like, but when it's in the DVR, I mean, right now I've got Justified, I've got Constantine, I've got Better Call Saul, I've got Walking Dead, I've got Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Tonight was Portlandia. When we finish the podcast, I'm going to go watch Archer. I'm still doing The Flash. There's so many. Well, I'm going to wait.
I've still been TiVoing Gotham. I only still watch that first episode that we talked about in the podcast back in October or September, whenever
that. We're all here.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm sticking with it. It's very uneven. I wish it was as good as The Flash.
Is it better than the first episode?
Yes and no. It's very frustrating right now, and I don't think I've talked about it in a while, where it's like every episode, 20 minutes are really good and 20 minutes are really bad. It's like within the episode. They're not having a bad episode or a bad season. They're having like a bad segment.
It's a bad act.
Yeah, right now they've gotten to a good rhythm with the cops. Like Gordon's really good. Bullock's gotten a lot better. The Riddler's really interesting. Penguin has taken over the show, and he's good.
Okay. Actually, I'm pretty surprised that Bullock is. I just assumed that Bullock would be killed off by like episode 3.
Yeah, but Donald Logue's always really good. So, and he is a known character from the comics. So they were able to fix a lot of the stuff that was done with him. The Bruce Wayne stuff is. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not good. If they push it too far, it gets really bad. But the mob stuff is terrible. It's like they're all doing bad impressions of The Sopranos. I just want them all to die and then just be replaced by the supervillains.
You know, you would think that it wouldn't be a controversial statement to say, I just want all the mob to die.
Yeah, but I want them to be replaced by psychopaths. And now they're going to start teasing the Joker. Now they're going to show a kid who might become the Joker. And they have all of these supervillains.
And is it different? And is it different from the dude who did stand up?
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a kid, because the big complaint everyone has online is that when Bruce Wayne grows up, he's going to do nothing but fight 50-year-olds. Yeah. Because they've introduced just about all of his villains. And some of them are little kids, but some of them are adults.
Poison Ivy is his only contemporary.
Yeah, the last couple of weeks they introduced the Scarecrow and his son. So his son's really going to be the Scarecrow.
Wait a second, wasn't Scarecrow and Son a procedural in the 80s?
I believe it was a sitcom with Red Fox. Come on, Pop, we got too much fear gas in his junkyard. Shut up, you big super villain. I'm always two steps away from a Sanford and Son reference. But they did. They teased like the kid was going to grow up to be the Scarecrow, but his dad was basically the Scarecrow. It's frustrating. Did you ever add Constantine?
No. I did not.
I adore it. And now, it was interesting as you were talking about Universal and Synergy. Mm-hmm. The rumor now is that it's doing perfect on the bubble numbers.
Okay.
Where the numbers when it airs aren't great. The downloads and the DVR numbers are great. And it's got a rabid fan base, of which I am one of them.
So Constantine is the new Community.
Oh, yeah. And it's on the same network. So, but the rumor now,
hey, mediocre responses.
Yeah. Six seasons in a movie, Constantine.
Yeah. See, this must be awesome corporate movies. Awesome meetings in the boardroom. How are we doing? Eh.
Pretty much.
We're not doing bad.
Yeah. Well, the rumor is if they don't renew it, instead of canceling it, they might just move it to Sci-Fi because Universal owns it.
Sure.
And you know what? The numbers it's getting on NBC,
mm-hmm.
My guess is they will keep those same numbers on Sci-Fi because the people that are watching it are super into it.
Right.
They'll just move it from network to cable. And those numbers for basic cable are really good.
Right.
So this kind of freedom now that we didn't have.
Would it require a budget that that Sci-Fi could handle?
I could see it getting its budget cut, but I think it wouldn't hurt the show. It's very X-Files, where it's like there's some supernatural stuff, but it's mostly procedural.
Right.
So it's like if you tone down the supernatural stuff, maybe you cut down on locations where instead of – it's the kind of budget where instead of walking from his car to the outside of the building and having a scene, they just cut to them in the building.
I just do it in the studio break room.
Yeah, and that's always what happens when you cut the budget. You never see any cars anymore. It's like, remember,
we learned when we saw them filming Spider-Man just how many people you have to drive those cars 10 feet.
Cars cost money. Remember in Community, they were always on the quad in like season one?
Yes.
And then you'd never see them go out. Now they're just in the library. That's how you cut the budget. It costs a lot of money to bring cameras outside and wait for it to be sunny.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week.
My greatest thing is actually going to be Juliana Finch. I just learned about Juliana Finch. She's sort of a folksy singer-songwriter. And she's just got an amazing voice, and you can listen to her stuff on her Bandcamp, preview it there, and get her music there. And I've really just started listening to some of those CDs, and she just has such a pleasant voice to listen to. I think one of they posted on her website, somebody described her as, you know, Juliana sounds like a good bourbon should feel, and she's just got that. It's not one of those throaty, gravelly type thing, just really pleasant to listen to. And she was on the cruise we were just on, and she was just amazing with her fans and the people who are there and just performing and just doing different things. And so definitely check out Juliana Finch.
Cool. I'm gonna go with myself Better Call Saul, because I think it's doing exactly what you want a spinoff of a great show to do, is that it clearly exists in the same world of Breaking Bad, and it's a prequel, but it's got just enough nods to that show without being beholden to it.
Okay.
So it's kind of like, it's nowhere near in tone, but it's almost like Deep Space Nine, where it's like, here's another part of this world, this universe that you already enjoy. And right. They're walking this great line between comedy and drama. And I've always been a huge fan of Bob Odenkirk ever since mm-hmm. the Ben Stiller show. And he was a guy that he had this interesting period after Mr. Show, which, you know, was this huge cultural icon.
Sure.
In the 2000s, he struggled for a little bit. He wanted to become a director, mm-hmm. and he made, you know, The Brother Solomon and Let's Go to Prison. They were both bombs. And he was doing kind of a lot of sitting at home writing screenplays that weren't getting picked up. And he got a call to be on like one episode of Breaking Bad, and he didn't think he'd be an actor anymore. And now he's starring in this show where I've never seen his range push so far. And there have been two episodes, and I think it is the kind of show where you don't have to have watched Breaking Bad. You can see this from the beginning, understand Bob Odenkirk's character, and just go with it. But it's so supported by Breaking Bad, which, you know, is come on, it's a show everyone should watch. It's undeniably great. I know people who don't watch it who can't believe it doesn't live up to the hype, but I don't know anyone who didn't say it's not amazing.
Okay, I'll definitely have to add it. I remember listening to Odenkirk when he was on Chris Hardwick's podcast back in October, and he was talking about the process he's going through and what he's been learning as he's doing Better Call Saul and just talking about trying to find the voice of the show. And it was really a fascinating interview.
Yeah, I just read an interview with him. The most important question they said, "Are you going to be doing any writing on the show?" Because, you know, he's a producer, he's starring on it, and obviously the guy's a great writer. He comes from Saturday Night Live and the Ben Stiller Show and Mr. Show, and he said, "I am absolutely never going to write this show. They are doing such a good job, and why would I want to get in the way of that?"
Nice.
And he's really taking the acting seriously, and it's, you can see he knows the opportunity he's been given, and it's not the kind of opportunity he sought. But he's making the absolute most of it. And I think...
And it's amazing how those opportunities that you never sought, but that you're ready for when they come, those are the big ones.
That's what changes your life. Yeah, and it's already been greenlit for season two, and I see this running just as long as Breaking Bad. And as you know, Breaking Bad ended when Vince Gilligan went, "We've done enough episodes."
Right.
So, you know, AMC would rather be showing seasons 8 of Breaking Bad than season 1 of Better Call Saul. But
right.
So far, the ratings are really good. The network supports it. It'll be on as long as he wants it to be on.
Okay. So what's your thought on everybody who talks about how The Walking Dead is really, it's a sequel to Breaking Bad?
I think it's funny. I think it comes from, there's a little in-joke. Do you know where the in-joke came from?
No, I don't.
In the season 2 opener, when they're on the highway, the episode where they lose Sophia,
right?
Daryl pulls out a bag of stuff he's found, and there's drugs in there, and there is blue crystal meth. And that was just an in joke of like a nod to their other show. But people have picked up that ball and run with it. What do you think of the Walking Dead theory that the zombie apocalypse has never happened and Rick Grimes is having a fever dream in his coma?
Oh, I'm so afraid that could be true.
Kirkman said it's not.
Oh, good. I could certainly see that happening. Somebody gets, especially if the internet just angers Kirkman too much, he'll just do that.
Yeah, like he just wakes up in the hospital bed and Laurie and Carl are there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And Drew Carey is his doctor.
I feel like he won't do that because that'll kill the comic book sales. And he's still publishing them. Well, Bill, how do we follow you online?
You can follow me at cromely.net, cromely.net, and on twitter.com/cromely.
You can follow me at Not In My Book on Twitter. That is the Caffeinated Comics Twitter feed. Like us on Facebook. A lot of things going on Facebook. And Steven's shop is 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois. We will talk to you next week.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that!